Money FM 89.3, best of weekends. International News Review.
And let's bring on Steve Okun, Senior Advisor at McLarty Associates, our regular international news reviewer. Steve, good morning. How you doing?
I'm great. Good morning, GVC. And let me just say, it's great that you have a co-host who has such a wide breadth of experience, unlike that other guy you have on Saturday.
That guy on Saturday, I know. He's so narrow. He writes books, but come on.
Good to see
Karen,
you, Steve.
Karen can do it all. Karen does it all. Karen is a true multi-threat, unlike that other guy.
Well, and to my knowledge, Neil doesn't cook very much, too. So already, you know, Karen can cook. She can write. She can do, you know, speeches, everything.
Yeah, but we're all surrounded by the love for food. We've gained 4.8 kg club. But it's great. It's great to talk to you, Steve.
Steve, did you hear the last segment about the Singaporeans gaining 4.8 kg over the course of the year?
So I guess my 2.2 kg gain isn't so bad.
You're way ahead of the curve. Of the curve. Anyway, Steve, let's start close to home here, because the Prime Minister was talking at the Davos, the closing day of the Davos Forum, and he talked about, you know, China has to work to earn legitimacy and acceptance. In his words, the U.S. has a very difficult adjustment of the world's hyperpower and has to accept that China's not going anywhere. You know, he talked about this quote-unquote generational struggle that we're in the middle of between the two major powers. When you hear, read these comments, see what comes to mind about our way forward in Asia, right, where these two players are so all-encompassing?
Well, I think, you know, Prime Minister Lee, you know, hit the nail on the head. And a lot of the questions that you know, I've been getting, a lot of the commentary you hear is, you know, when it comes to U.S.-China relations, well, what's Joe Biden going to do? What's the Biden administration going to do? What's the change going to be from Trump to Biden? But the equally important question is, what is she going to do? What is China going to do? How is China going to change? And I think that you know, Prime Minister Lee's speech at Davos is exactly the right way to frame it. China has to change, too. If China stays on the same path that it's been on, you know, for roughly, you know, at least 5 years, predating Trump, if not longer, we are going to have this generational conflict, which nobody wants. And so he framed it exactly the right way. Both sides need to adapt. As, you know, Bill Bishop in Sinocism writes, you know, in U.S.-China relations, the Trump era may be over, but the Xi era goes forward.
It was interesting, Steve. You know, Prime Minister Lee was quite blunt in his statement, and it was a live statement as well. That kind of took me off guard a little bit. Do we sense that Prime Minister Lee or Singapore is now feeling like, hey, we can step up after the last few years of everything that Singapore has done with the summit with you know, Trump and North Korea? Is there a sense that Singapore is now really starting to move into a more vocal stance?
Well, I don't know if it vocal, maybe, but not confrontational, not mediator. I mean, Singapore is in a position where it can, you know, speak truth to everybody and lay out what the situation is on the ground, and that China is incredibly important to Singapore. China is going as it is to all of ASEAN, as it is to all of Asia, and that it's important to have as good a relations as you can have between, you know, ASEAN and China, same as you have to have those important relations with the U.S. and ASEAN. And that's where I think Singapore can be a real good, you know, if not spokesperson, but witness for what is happening and tell both sides what they need to hear, not that both sides always want to hear it.
No, it's true. I mean, Singapore has to straddle both. So I'm just curious. I mean, Singapore is stated to host a World Economic Forum in May. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what do you think Singapore can do to exert greater leadership, but also be better at balancing, you know, the U.S. And the China strive for dominance?
Well, I think that Singapore, you know, really sees itself, or at least I see how Singapore sees itself, is being, you know, kind of that being the honest interlocutor. I mean, maybe they're not going to be a broker. They're not going to be a mediator. They are not going. That is not the role that, you know, any country can really play between the U.S. and China. But The Singapore can be honest in its discussions on the record and behind the scenes to both governments. I mean, I think in a way that's, you know, the role that we see ourselves when I speak as a member of the U.S. business community here is to tell, you know, the U.S. government what is happening in the region, and that China is the significant player in Southeast Asia. It is significant for U.S. businesses. So we have to find a way to work with them. That said, it's going to be very difficult. To do that, especially some of the rhetoric you're hearing out of both Washington and Beijing now is we're leading towards the Biden administration hitting the ground running.
Yeah. Steve, let's move on. We got a lot to talk about this morning. President Biden says that the U.S. needs the $1.9 trillion stimulus package now. Can't wait for Republicans and Democrats to bicker over it. So he is at a moment where he is probably going to push past some Republicans in this process. So early in the honeymoon period of 100 days, will that be a challenge for him, or is it just something that he needs to do and let everybody else get over it?
He needs to do it. I mean, look, the Democrats are in total control of the government right now in terms of the House, Senate, and White House. And if the Democrats don't act and make the country in a better position, then they are going to lose that majority in 2 years' time in the midterm elections. They're going to lose the House and the Senate. And so it's the right thing to do from a policy perspective is get the stimulus passed, help out local governments, get the vaccines out there so that we can address COVID as best as possible. And it is not something that that the Democrats are going to wait for the Republicans to get on board with. And there's a process in the United States Senate called reconciliation, where you can pass certain types of legislation with just Democratic votes. If you have a majority and the Democrats have that, a majority with the tiebreaker with the vice president. So there's going to be some constraints on it within the Democratic Party. But the Democrats are not going to wait. The Republicans can either come on board or not. But the most important thing to do is to be effective and make a difference in people's lives.
So how do you think the upcoming impeachment is going to be a distraction in, you know, for really pushing on battling the global pandemic for the Democrats?
Well, I mean, that's going to the Democrats are in a kind of, you know, between a rock and a hard place in a way, because they need to show that what Donald Trump did in leading an insurrection against the United States government cannot stand. And frankly, it's better from an international perspective if the U.S. government collectively, Republicans and Democrats, come out and say that what Donald Trump did was unconstitutional, was illegal, and he should not be allowed to run for president or any other federal office ever again. I don't think enough Republicans are going to go forward on that, but the Democrats need to do that. But at the same time, we have thousands of people dying every day in the United States. We need to get that addressed, and that's going to have to be done partially through the Senate and through the House in terms of giving states the money they need, in terms of allocating more money for vaccines, in terms of giving people who are unemployed benefits that are going to expire in a month and a half or so. So you're going to have to find a way to do both. It is a very tough time politically in the United States, but we have to find a way through it.
Talking with Steve Okun, the senior advisor at McClarty Associates and International News Review. Steve, President Biden has overturned over 40, I believe, at this point, dozens and dozens of executive orders that were written up by his predecessor. My question to you, of course, we could go through each of them and talk about the pros and cons, but my question is a broader one, and that is, how long can the U.S. continue to, you know, effectively rule by executive order in certain circumstances, you know, when the following administration reverses what the previous administration has done, versus passing actual legislation in Congress, which is would be bipartisan in some way, shape, or form? How long can this?
Yeah, the way I kind of think about this is that there's three R's that the Biden administration is focusing on right now. It's reverse, it's repair, and it's rebuild. So reverse is what Donald Trump did by executive authority. You reverse that and you reverse it right away. And that is not very good long term for the United States. You know, you're in you know, Paris, you're out of Paris, you're back in Paris. You're in Iran, you're out of Iran, you're back in Iran. You're, you know, you have a Muslim, you allow immigration, you don't allow Muslims, you allow Muslims again. I mean, that is not good, but you have to reverse that quickly. So what the Biden administration has done is correct in that regard. Then you have that second R, repair. How do you repair the damage to the coronavirus from the United States. You don't wait for Democrats or for Republicans to do that. You do it however you have to do it. And if it's through reconciliation, another R, but if you repair through reconciliation, you still get things through the Congress and you don't worry about it yet. Rebuild is going to take bipartisanship. If we are going to rebuild in terms of infrastructure and get major legislation through the Congress that that has elements of sustainability to it, that's going to be bipartisan. That is going to take longer. Hopefully, Democrats and Republicans can come together in the rebuild phase. Unfortunately, what you're going to see is because you're going to see a Democratic-led initiative in the reverse and repair phase that may hit the rebuild. But you can do things that are long lasting along party lines, like Obamacare was, like the Trump tax cuts were. That was done through reconciliation, Republican votes only. Those are going to outlast the Trump administration. So you can get a few things done. But you're right, Glenn, to address that rebuild, what it really needs focus from the United States has to be done bipartisan. And there's very little evidence that that's possible in the United States.
No, in fact, I think the world is watching. This is a watershed moment for democracy and how successful a two-party system is, because we are seeing hyper-polarization here. And as opposed to certain countries which are a single-party rule, which seems to have gotten it much better in terms of battling the COVID-19 pandemic. So I'm just curious, where do you think the future of American democracy would be?
In 3 minutes or less.
Well, Karen, the kind of way I ask, what is the future of the Republican Party, right? I mean, for a two-party system to work, you need to have two effective parties. Ideally, in the United States, we've had kind of a center-left and a center-right party. The Republican Party is no longer a center-right party. It is now a party of Donald Trump. And the question is, can that Republican Party become a center-right party again? Or if not, will the Trump wing be small enough that it will no longer be effective and something will have to come in and replace it? And we've seen the dissolution. Well, we haven't seen the dissolution of a party in the United States since it happened over 100 years ago. But it has happened. And that's going to take time. But that's, I think, how the Republicans work this out is the real test. To whether, Karen, we can do what we need to do as a country. And I don't know that we can until that happens.
Steve, let's talk about another big move this week, which was the Centers for Disease Control now putting in, sweeping legislation to make sure everybody on public transport is masked going forward. Of course, the Department of Transportation, your old stomping ground for many years in Washington, is going to be behind at some level implementing this. Tell us where we should be looking at with this.
Well, I mean, this is a sign that the United States is going to get serious about, trying to stop the pandemic until we get, until we get to the point where the vaccinations are out. I mean, the Trump administration absolutely refused to use its authority to require masks from passengers on airlines. The airlines were begging, the flight attendants were begging the Department of Transportation under Trump to issue such an order, and they refused to do so because the Trump administration played politics when it came to the pandemic. The Biden administration is saying, we're going to let the science dictate us, and we're going to use all our power as a federal government to address the pandemic based on science. The science says you wear masks. We have the authority to require masks on anything that touches federal transportation or federal funds. So that includes mass transit. It includes trains. It includes planes. And so this is a step saying the science is going to lead us on the pandemic and we're not going to play politics with us. But, Karen used the word hyper-partisanship. Hopefully this will enable us to get past that a bit when it comes to the pandemic.
Yeah, in fact, Biden himself also highlighted there's a difference between, vaccinations and vaccines. Right? You might get the vaccines out, but how do we encourage a majority of the population to get vaccinated? So where do you see Americans embracing this in terms of vaccinations?
Well, I mean, that's part of it is it's going to take time. It could take another 6 months or longer. before enough people are vaccinated. So you have to keep up the masks and the social distancing. And so it's important to have that in place. And then it's important to have a federal response to the vaccinations, which we haven't had before. There are news reports out that there are 20 million vaccines that no one knows where they are because there was no tracking of them as they got delivered to the states and the states weren't capable of it. So it is going to take a while to get this in place. And then once people start to get vaccinated and then they see that their friends have been vaccinated and that they haven't gotten sick, that I think you're going to see the uptake. You're going to see a lot more discussion around how to get people not afraid of vaccines. Maybe you're going to start requiring them for people if they want to go to school. And that's going to help. But boy, there's so much to worry about on the vaccination front right now that the first step is getting the vaccines and getting them out. And we haven't been able to even do that in a competent way yet. Yeah. So let's get there first.
Steve, let's close off the segment today by let me take you back to 1993. What were you doing in 1993? Do you remember?
Of course I remember. I was working in the White House. How can I forget 1993?
Well, okay. In 1993, something else was happening just a bit further south in Palm Beach, Florida, and that was Donald Trump had purchased the former estate of Marjorie Meriwether Post, of course, the founding wife of the Washington Post, and he had made that Mar-a-Lago property, as we all now know, into a club. Members only club, 1993. Now, the deal was, and he had to sign a paper that he would never live there, that people could only spend a total of, 21 days a year in residence there. The club could have no more than 500 members, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the ongoing saga is reaching a new phase in that Trump wants to live in Mar-a-Lago, and Palm Beach is saying, wait a minute, you cannot live here. This cannot be your primary residence. So what do we know about where this might all go?
Well, I think it shows that Donald Trump may not get convicted of impeachment, but he may get evicted. It's pretty clear. I mean, you know, he signed an agreement, and there are a lot of people who are in that neighborhood who don't want, you know, the former president living there. Putting politics aside, you're going to see protests there. You're going to see road closures there. Anytime he comes in and out, the Secret Service is going to, impact the residential traffic flows in there. So people don't want him there for not necessarily even for political reasons. And so, you know, do you really, you know, I'd ask myself, you know, do I really want to have to take a lawsuit to try and live in a location that's not meant to be a private residence? So I'm guessing this is going to end with him living near the club. He certainly has the financial means to buy another large property in that area. So I think that's where it's going to end up. But it shows that he is going to be mired in litigation from Florida to New York to Washington and who knows where else. But hopefully he'll do so from a residence that he can enjoy and that the neighbors will be okay with.
Well, and he's also done other things, like he installed a helipad, which was expressly forbidden in the original terms of him doing a club there. So, I mean, but everyone kind of turned a blind eye while he was president. By the way, he's overextended that 21-day period by far during his presidency in terms of staying there and living there. Do you think it's possible he might just close the club and make it back into a home?
No, I mean, I don't think he wants to do that. I mean, I think the club makes a relatively, or at least had made a lot of money for him. It's a good business. I don't know that he could do that, but legally that would be tough. I think it would be much easier to just buy another place near there. But I think it shows that, yeah, when he was president, he was basically exempt from lawsuits, certainly any criminal lawsuits or people, you know, look the other way. Lawsuits were put on hold. That's all over now. So you're going to see, you know, lawsuits from eviction to sexual harassment to tax evasion. and many more that he's going to be embroiled in coming his way.
Yeah, I know. I think the first family is still very determined to stay in the public eye and to, you know, dip themselves into politics. And what are your thoughts about, I mean, because I think Ivanka and the family are all flying and being based in Florida. So how do you think they will continue to be a force in the GOP?
Well, they're going to be a force because he is the most popular figure in the Republican Party. His family and brand are very popular in the Republican Party. And the more he can do that, the more opportunity he has to raise money, to be that reality star, even though he's not president, to position himself for a run in 2024, even if he's not going to do so. So he may not be on Twitter, but that doesn't mean he's gone away. And this is going to have a large impact on Joe Biden's foreign policy, because so long as countries think that it's possible that Donald Trump or someone like Donald Trump becomes president 4 years from now, why would you do an agreement with the United States? Because, you know, Glenn, is, as you mentioned kind of in the first question, it would just reverse everything every 4 years. And so why would you position yourself more towards the United States and less towards China if that may hurt you in the long run? So, yeah, I think people, even though it's kind of a spectacle to watch Donald Trump in politics now that he's out of the White House, it has serious policy implications, both domestic and foreign.
Steve, we're just seeing some news that's coming across about how Trump's top impeachment lawyer has left his team. Bill Butch Boyers. Ooh, that's a tongue. That's a mouthful. Who had played a major role in the Senate trial. The former president is no longer with the team. Deborah Barbier, another South Carolina lawyer, won't be doing it either. So we're seeing that there is legal strategy issues that are going to start popping up with the Trump team. I know we weren't scheduled to really talk about this much, but have you seen that news, or what would your general comments be?
I saw just that kind of the brief headline. I mean, I think this is what the question the Democrats have going into impeachment. If you know Donald Trump is not going to get convicted by the Senate, and that's the presumption because you've only had five senators, Republican senators, who voted that it was constitutional to even have an impeachment trial for an ex-president, and you need 17 to find him guilty. So if it's preordained that Donald Trump's going to be not guilty in impeachment, you are going to, if you're the Democrats, want to set this up to make the Republicans take a very tough vote, to vote him not guilty with a mindset of independence in those, you know, non-Trump Republicans. If you see a lawyer dropping out of a case, you know, relatively, you know, quickly, there's clearly going to be some disagreement with the legal strategy. Maybe, you know, Donald Trump wants to not testify and he thinks he should testify. Maybe Donald Trump wants to say, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't say what I said. Mm-hmm. I didn't bring people to Washington on January 6th. I didn't say come here, it's going to be a wild time. I didn't say go march on the Capitol and you have to show strength. So it could be, you know, a substantive disagreement, but it's never a good sign, you know, when a lawyer drops from a case. We'll probably never find out why, but when we see the trial as it happens, it'll give us some indication of what Donald Trump's defense is going to be.
Well, I take issue with that. We'll find out when Butch writes his book and drops his book, then we'll know for sure, right? For $29.95 in hardback. Steve Ogun, thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it, as always.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. So great being on with both of you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.